and welcome to episode 6 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm your host, Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars and Stalkerville, and as always, joining me to traverse the epic landscape of small press comic books are writer, artist, and creator of the ongoing superhero webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the bearded Thelma to our Louise, it's Tony Esmond.
Oh, fucking hell.
And just like that, the show is off the rails.
I haven't got a beard at the moment, so fuck you.
Oh, you. Why ruin a good thing? Right, after last week's show, where it was just the three of us talking for 90 minutes, we decided we're not going to do that again next week.
Oh, fuck that.
So this time, we've got a special guest.
Hello.
He's the creator and writer of the series Afterlife Inc. and one of the creative masterminds behind the hyperactively awesome comics collective Big Punch Studios. It's John Locke. Welcome to the show, John.
Hi, John.
Hello.
Hey, John.
Thank you, Vince. It's glowing. It's not accurate, but glowing.
Must be nice to get a nice introduction.
Oh, I am feeding you gold every week, Tony Esmond. Right. Like the other unfortunate guests before him, John has agreed to stay with us for the entirety of the show. He's already signed an agreement that states we cannot be held responsible for any psychological or physical harm that may befall him over the next 90 minutes. So that's all right, lads. We're safe. But before we ask John about his comics, processes, etc., let's talk about what we've all been reading or doing this week. So, Mr. Esmond?
Well, obviously, I tweeted out that I just watched Alvin and the Chipmunks Chipwrecked.
Awesome.
That's very good.
Oh, God.
Cool. One star that got on the old Virgin film thing. I just saw
I'm glad you looked that up after I tweeted it out. That.
Was it everything you hoped it would be?
Sorry?
Was it everything you hoped it would be?
Yeah, and more. And more.
I guess better than that 9%.
Yeah, it got him to where he needed to be. Let's just leave it at that.
Cheered me up. Okay. Yeah, no, otherwise I've picked up quite a few books this week, actually. Some good with some bad, but the obviously in the spirit of being positive, I'm only going to refer to the good ones. Fever Dreams, I picked up by a guy called Adam Murphy. Does anyone know him at all? Or
no,
I haven't heard of him. No.
Yeah, no, the name. Yeah, I think the name rings a bell.
Yeah, you might know him from, he does Phoenix, a children's comic, and he does a
book. Oh, of course, that's it. Yeah.
And he does a story in there called Corpse Talk. I don't read Phoenix, but I've had a look at it, and it's very good. But this is the complete other side of the coin for him. This is basically sort of psychosexual funny dreams that he has. So it's not for that crowd at all.
It's but I think just it's right for you.
Yeah, absolutely spot on for me. Yeah. It's not kids friendly. Moments I've described it as moments in it that are sort of sordid, dirty, tiny bit pervy, but it's really, really excellent. I really enjoyed it. You open it and page one is a man sitting at a computer. It's very, very similar to your new front room, Vince, actually. A man sitting at his computer surrounded by pornography on the wall.
I'm not going to even dignify that with a response. Just keep going, Tony.
And doing something to himself anyway. Sit well again. You know,
this is not a video show, Tony.
It sounds a hell of a lot like that proposed Lonely Vince autobiographical comic.
Yeah, Lonely Vince goes to the toilet.
Can we just move on?
It's sort of nightmarish. It's got a sort of touch of the funny about it, but it's sort of nightmarish sexual dreams. I'm presuming they're real dreams because there's little bits of it that sort of you can think, oh my god, where did he come up with that sort of thing from, you know. And I read it this week. I picked it up this week. I mean, I think it's a 2014 comic, but I only saw it this week. But I read it after the double punch of Air Boy and Minimum Wage, when anyone's reading them, which are both sort of quite sort of adult content. My favourite story in it is a story called Marine Biology about a guy in a diving bell. He sees a mermaid through the sort of huge length porthole window and tries to get her in the bell to have sex with her. But because of the sort of nature of being deep underwater and the bends, they decide to sort of mutually masturbate through the window.
Okay.
Which is something we've all done, I suppose. Do you know what I mean? Sort of.
This is the kind of story I would probably write up, I think.
Think so?
Good. Yeah, I reckon so.
Yeah, we should collaborate.
Not at all.
I am terrified of the rating this episode's going to get.
I'm just picturing, this is evidence A. Yeah. This is like the prosecution's case will hinge upon this.
Yeah.
Well, it's called Tony Waste does the kind of the more kind of, you know, stuff. So
cerebral and adult. That's you, isn't it, Tony?
Yeah, arty, I like to think of it. That's French New Wave cinema.
Yeah.
So he sort of mutually masturbates through the window with her, and then he throws the result of that into the water. And something happens as he's sort of sailing away on the boat. He's being followed by three mermaids, if you see what I mean.
Okay.
I posted some art from the pages on Twitter, and it immediately got sort of quite a lot of responses from people on there saying how nice it was. And I've said it's coloured really well. It's got a sort of bit of a shaky line to the sort of the style of the pages, but it's coloured in a sort of reflective two-tone colour. On pages is sort of the blue of the water and the red in the interior of the diving bell and stuff like that.
Mm.
Really, really beautiful stuff.
Do you think because of that sort of print process, it benefits it being a print book? You really should pick it up in print rather than digital.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's digital. To be fair, I'm not sure if you can get it digitally because it's such a small press thing, you know. Mm.
Yeah.
Just like, was this something he put out himself, or did it have like a larger publisher attached?
No, I think it's just him. Yeah, I think it's just him putting it out from the looks of it. To me, it's almost like he's got to get it out. You know, he's spending all this time doing kids' comics and he's got to get that out of his system almost, you know?
Mm.
If anyone knows Hunt Emerson, anyone know any of the sort of pornography comics that Hunt Emerson did years ago?
No.
Ring any bells? No, it's sort of filthy, trippy, crazy, sort of sexy. But it's got like moments of subtlety. There's little points in it. You think, oh, okay. He plays a bit with stereotypes. He plays a bit a couple, and the toing and froing between their sort of the sexual etiquette. I'll refer to it as that. It sort of it plays with your mind a little bit around that, you know.
Mm.
But yeah, really, really, really nice. Really enjoyed it. It's from Fever Dreams. I think it was Fiverr. I think it was a Fiverr. I got it in the small press bit of Orbital Comics.
How many pages is it?
Oh, God, now you're asking. It's got to be 50, 60 pages, I suppose.
Really?
Maybe.
Oh, decent.
Yeah, it's quite lengthy.
Is each dream like a little kind of like vignette, or is there a overarching, has he made an overarching plot of it, or is it just more like dream logic? It's just...
No, it's separate stories, but the only logic is that they're all sort of...
Sexy.
Anxiety dreams, almost. Yeah, sexy anxiety. There's moments here that aren't sexy, but I think nearly every one of them has some kind of sort of... There's a man who strips off, and he strips all the way down to his skeleton in one of the stories, and you know this sort of thing. A couple that meet in a diner, and one of them's the devil, and one's an angel, and you know they sort of tempt each other in different ways. It's so there's no sort of overarching sort of bookend to it. It's just sort of a series of dreams. I would say probably looking at the art styles, they were done over a period of time. Could they change a little bit?
I have to jump on your Twitter feed to take a look at that.
Yeah, have a look. There's a couple of pages on there. Yeah, if you have a look.
Yeah,
very good. You can get it. www.adammurphy.com is his website, and at @Adam_T_Murphy is his Twitter handle. So have a look.
Good. Nice. What about you, Dan?
We've had a lot of stuff sent into the show, so I've kind of been there.
Thank you very much for that, folks, by the way.
So, very much appreciated. But this week I've been reading The Last Sheriff by Chris Imbert and Chris Jenkins. You'll probably remember Chris, or you might not. From last week's show, we used his kind of email as a kind of center point for our discussion around creating buzz. So he's a really nice guy. I've been chatting with him on Twitter. Yeah, he's really nice.
Yeah, much the same. It's like we've not met in person, but we've been chatting on Twitter and stuff. And he's a really nice guy. I'd actually like to meet him in person at some point.
He's a lovely bloke. I won't say anything else other than that, Chris, just in case this is used as evidence.
I think won't he be at Thought Bubble? I think he might be at Thought Bubble.
He's going to be at Nottingham as well, I believe.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, I think so.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, the comic he sent in was the first issue called The Last Sheriff. It's the first issue by their studio, Reckless Hero Studios, and they've got a ton of other books kind of in the pipeline. And it's a exciting romp for a futuristic Wild West kind of landscape. And the last sheriff, he's kind of like the protagonist. Like, he's the last of the high-powered, super-powered lawmen who have basically been hunted down to extinction. I couldn't judge too much of the first issue. It suffers that kind of thing that the first issue is a lot of kind of set-up and build-up, and you wait for the payoff. There is a bit of payoff at the end of the issue. But I'd love to see a second one. I mean, the art is absolutely fabulous. It's just amazing. Chris is
working on he's been posting images of the second issue, which he's thoroughly enjoying drawing from the looks of it, and it looks pretty sort of Mad Maxian and fairly awesome in its own way. So yeah,
he's got more kind of like Udon Studios kind of style.
That's it. Yeah. And I mean, the pencils by Chris are excellent, and then when Chris Jenkins adds a colour to it, it's like another dimension. They're brilliant, absolutely breathtaking pages. Yeah. Really good stuff.
Yeah, it's a nicely put together book. Actually, I've got the physical copy of that, and it's just it's well worth looking out for that.
Brilliant.
I think, is it available on Comixology as well? I think recently it just
yes,
arrived.
It is, isn't it?
Yes,
it is. Yeah. Yeah, because he sent us the link, didn't he? But he sent it to the group email, so we couldn't sort of download it. But yeah.
Yeah, because we're all sort of like troglodytes who don't understand technology.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not too. That's not a million miles from the truth, really. I also went to see that new Mission Impossible film today, which I didn't really rate that too much. My wife loves them because they're kind of like brainless action films, but it's kind of, once again, Ethan Hunt is kind of disavowed and has to chase the MacGuffin to solve all the problems.
Yeah. Wasn't it a rabbit's foot in number three?
Oh, number three is really good.
Yeah.
No, it's weird, isn't it? Like, I'm amazed they still keep making these movies, and I'm thinking, like, who's going to see them? Because
all the people that want to see Tom Cruise fall off a plane, they just want to see Tom Cruise do the latest stupid stunt. That's what it is.
They want him to run with his hands out like he's like they're razors through the air.
You know, they keep pimping out that stunt, like when he's hanging onto the side of the plane, he's putting newspapers on everything, and then that happens within the first 5 minutes, and it's just like, well. That's one great big stunt. You spunked it away. It's just a waste.
I don't believe he is clinging to a plane because he's been going on about, I do all my own stunts and that. You're not clinging to a plane as it takes off, though, are you? I've got to be honest with you. I don't care what you say.
Well, you're going to have a harness on, aren't you, and everything. Yeah, you're
bit,
not.
Yeah. A bit of Gorilla Tape and all of that.
Fear no one else.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Sorry about that, anyway.
No, that's all right. Well, the thing is, Dan, I'm more on board with you going to see Mission Impossible than anything involving chipmunks. So... That's all I have to say.
Right. I'm doing a rewatch of Lex at the moment. Does anyone remember that series?
Do you remember the moment you got on like a couple of episodes ago when you mentioned Lex?
And it was
a real audio tumbleweed moment.
It was, wasn't it? Yeah. it's like earlier when I said everyone's mutually masturbated through a window. No one said anything.
Yeah.
Just like that now, look.
Yeah.
Same effect.
Tony Esmond, conversation killer.
But the special effects and Lex look like they were done on like someone's home PC. Maybe they were. I don't know.
Yeah, I hope they were.
Yeah.
At least he doesn't have Tom Cruise doing silly runs in it without his shirt on.
Yeah. Look, we've all done that. Yeah. Anyway, so
Lex. Sorry to interrupt. Wasn't Lex like a kind of sexy version of Farscape?
Oh, it predates Farscape. You troglodyte. Yeah. What are you talking about?
Okay, well, like Farscape was like a kind of stage version of Lex.
That's it. Brilliant. Yeah, no, it is exactly right. Yeah, that's very true. Yeah.
I had a whole plan for this episode, and it's just gone up in smoke. So, The Last Sheriff, Dan, it's worth a look.
Quality, yes.
Oh, okay.
Quality from front cover to back.
I know 100%. I know what you just want a pull quote on the back of issue two, don't you?
Yes.
That's totally what you're aiming for.
I'm getting on the Lex video sleeve, I tell you now.
What, physically?
The Blu-ray.
Yeah, the Blu-ray. Yeah. Oh, remastered Blu-ray.
Yeah, digitally remastered. Windows 95 graphics.
Oh, anyway, what have I been reading?
What have you read?
Have you been reading things?
I reread a book by Michael Garley, old Mike Garley. Samurai Slasher.
The Governor.
Yeah, that's very good.
Yeah. Have you heard of this, Dan?
I have indeed, yes.
I know you have, John. Samurai Slasher. All I got to say to anyone listening is this: if you like horror movies, and if you love like Jason Voorhees, Freddy Krueger, all those classic sort of slasher sort of icons, then this book is definitely for you. Because
what do you like samurai?
Yes, I think if you like samurai, I mean the clue's in the name. The clue's in the name is Samurai Slasher. So I think if there's not a samurai in this, then I want my money back.
Kind of does what it says in the tin.
Oh, there's a samurai in it. That's all right. We're all right.
I'm liking John being on the show because he completely threw you that question, didn't he?
Yeah.
That's brilliant. That's what I try and do every single time.
I'm trying to muscle my way in. I reckon if I do a good job, Vince will be out.
Every week. Yeah.
Look, you bunch of bastards.
Right. Vince actually holds the reins. He does the recording and all the technical bit. So,
yeah, so we're fucked if he's not here.
Oh, he's like Bill O'Reilly. He can just mute us if he doesn't like us.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I really should, shouldn't I? anyway, back on point. Samurai Slasher by Mike Garley and a host of artists. I believe he kickstarted it back in the day, but I think he's also got it available now. Basically, the setup is a mythical samurai warrior goes on a killer rampage. And if you like those 80s sort of slasher films, it'll be right up your street. It doesn't mess about. It's got that sort of like tongue-in-cheek sort of feel to the action, the gore, and the people that you just want to die. As anyone who's watched the Friday the 13th movie knows that there's an awful lot of people that we want to die. Mm. And this one, it's a little anthology. So you've got like four stories. The first one is a samurai slasher, which is basically about a bunch of youths in the woods who encounter the samurai slasher for the first time.
Is that drawn by Andy Clift?
Clift, yeah.
Andy Clift does.
Part of it, yes, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the origins of the samurai slasher is... you're throwing me again. No, the first story is art by Andy Clift with flats by John Scrivens. And you don't normally see people getting a nod for flatting, which is quite nice, I think.
Yeah, because Andy flats for Marvel, doesn't he? Andy's been doing The Punisher and stuff, and I think he's actually got a credit on The Punisher recently.
Yeah,
he's a good guy.
Yeah, good on you, Andy. Good on you, Andy.
Yeah.
And letters by Mike Stock. Mike Stock does the entire thing, and like he's a lettering sort of small press.
Yeah. He's a lettering legend.
I wasn't. Should I use the word legend? But you did it, and you're a legend, Mike.
He does them all, A through Z.
Does the odd exclamation marks. Brilliant.
Yeah. Uppercase, lowercase.
Oh, you bastards. Anyway, the second story is The Secret Origins of the Samurai Slasher, which is from a deathbed. An old man tells a nurse about the history of the Samurai Slasher, so you get a little kind of origin story, which is slightly murky. That one's got art by Gavin Mitchell, another man who's been about. I don't want to just besmirch your name, Gavin. I'm so sorry about that. The third story is The Exhibition of the Samurai Slasher, where someone takes a suit of armour and wants to make money off it. You know, that classic sort of... like films like The Relic. Have you ever seen the film The Relic?
Yeah.
The Relic.
Night at the Museum.
Yeah, that The Relic is worth watching. Night at the Museum less so.
Is that with Tom Sizemore?
Yeah.
Yeah, very good.
Big monster movie, so I'm in. And the last story is The Decimation of the Samurai Slasher, where it's a bunch of army guys going up against the titular hero. And that one's got art by Wynn Ryder, colours by Nathan Ashworth, and once again, letters by Mike Stock. The Exhibition of Samurai Slasher, I didn't mention it actually, that's art by Christina Gee, and colours by Nathan Ashworth. Now, as always, folks, if I've mentioned anyone's name wrong, which I normally do on the show, I apologise. But it's a beautiful looking book. It's pretty quick read. It's about like 48, 50 pages, but it's well worth it. It's proper fun, and if you're a fan of horror, then it's right up your street. It's a nice looking book. There's a couple of pages in the back which are sort of sketches of the actual character itself. There's a small little prose piece. I know we were talking about these the other day, but this one's very sort of short to the point. It's like an army report, so it works. Right. It works very nicely. It's not like someone trying to tell a big prose sort of short story, you know. You can get it. It's available on Comixology, as a lot of things are these days, apart from my comic, because they still haven't got back to me. And also Mike Garley's, you can get, whenever you see Mike at a convention, you know, if you see the Kill Screen sort of banner everywhere, head to his table. Plenty of good stuff there. You can also get it from his Big Cartel, which is mikegarley.bigcartel.com. Which you can also get the Kill Screen and lots of his other things there as well. So well worth checking out.
Brilliant. Yeah, we did a promo piece for the site on this down the tubes, and there's a soundtrack you can get for it as well.
Yes,
he's done a soundtrack. It's very John Carpenter, The Fog, Escape from New York type, you know, electronic soundtrack. Yeah, really good.
Immediately I'm in. I love John Carpenter.
So incorporates that whole kind of like, what do you listen to when you're writing? Well, in this case, reading comics.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I love that idea, like the idea of creating a soundtrack to listen to while you're reading the book. You know, I think.
I mean, it's a movie homage as well, isn't it? So it's got that. You know, it's a real sort of concept thing he's done. It's really nice. Yeah, really good.
And it knows exactly what it wants to do, and it's not patronizing to its influences. You know, sometimes you read a comic and you just think this wants to be something that it really hasn't got the balls to follow through on.
Yeah.
Whereas this one just knows what it is and does it well. And there's going to be more Samurai Slasher in the future. So
I think it's got the second one in planning, isn't it? If not already started, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, and I know I've sort of sketched him and doodled him a couple of times, because just drawing a samurai in general is a bit of a challenge.
Yeah.
So, So keep an eye out for that, folks. Samurai Slasher. What about you, Mr. Locke? What have you been reading?
Well, I feel I'm going to be put to shame, because you guys have been reading really nice, like small press, kind of like eclectic stuff. I've kind of been reading, I guess, a bit more mainstream stuff, really.
Never be ashamed of that, John. Never be ashamed.
Never be ashamed. I like to try and...
We'll read it.
I went down to my local bricks and mortar comic shop in Cheltenham. Quick little plug for Proud Lion, which I love.
Nice.
And, I cleaned out my folder, and I'm on a bit of a Grant Morrison binge at the moment, which anyone who knows me will know isn't really that much of a surprise. But I'm currently collecting... but his two ongoing series at the moment, Annihilator and Nameless, both of which I'm very much enjoying. Nameless is fantastic, but I think that's been on hold for a couple of months.
Is that Chris Burnham?
Yeah, he is now.
Yes. Yeah. And it's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. And you can tell he's having a lot of fun writing it. Annihilator is great as well. Fraser Irving on the artwork, and he's just astounding.
What's Annihilator about? I know about Nameless.
Annihilator is, well, Ben, who runs the local show, he knows I'm a massive Grant Morrison fan, and he always puts whatever news coming out. But I remember months ago him kind of pitching this to me. He said, you know, Grant Morrison's got this new series. I was like, oh, what's it about? He goes, well, basically, it's about a Hollywood screenwriter who's dying. He's suddenly diagnosed with an inoperable brain tumour, and he's trying to finish this one great big screenplay before he dies. And then out of the blue, the main character of the screenplay appears in real life and tells him that he doesn't have a tumour. In fact, he has the life story of this character stuck inside his brain.
Right.
And by writing it and getting it out of his head, will he survive?
Right, okay.
And then kind of like reality and his story start kind of overlapping. And it's really kind of like, you know, the artwork is incredible. The artwork's really kind of at times atmospheric and very detailed, at other times kind of like really sparse. But it's got this amazing classic Morrison-esque villain called Max Nomax, who's like this kind of dark Beelzebub-esque rock star kind of devil character who... in this other universe, which may be real, maybe not, maybe like the screenplay, he's like, he rebelled against the ultimate church and was consigned to a prison orbiting a black hole called the Annihilator. And it's fantastic. It's absolutely fantastic. And
yeah, sounds great. I must pick that up.
Yeah, yeah, sounds good.
No, it's really good. And it's published by Legendary, which I think is Chris Nolan's film production company.
Oh, okay.
I think. And at the same time, he's just started doing... he's been talking about it for years, but he's just started doing a comic book adaptation of the epic Hindu poem, the Bhagavad Gita.
Right.
Because, you know, like you do.
Yeah.
And I think that's already been optioned for a movie. So clearly he's making some friends in kind of like the movie world. And then just to kind of wrap it up, I went back this week, because I wanted something light and relaxing, and I went back and reread The Filth.
Okay, yeah, the Chris Weston thing.
Yeah.
And that's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, I remember, like, one of the first, I want to say, like, proper comics I ever found, like, the ones which wasn't, like, I don't know, Marvel Panini reprints or whatever, like, the first one I kind of stumbled across. I got into, like, Grant Morrison's JLA, but this was at a time in my life when I didn't even really appreciate, like, the creative team behind a comic, if you know what I mean. It was just, like, oh, it's just a comic. You know, comics just get made. You don't care about who makes it. But then for the first time, I kind of like, I thought, oh, I really like the writing in this. I'm going to track down some other stuff by him. So I bought The Filth at an age when I probably really couldn't process what was going in there. And I felt like, oh, man, this is, I don't like this. I don't like this at all. I thought, oh, man, this is weird.
Is this book responsible for a lot of who you are, John? Is this
pretty much? Yeah, it kind of like it really stunted my development as a human being.
Yeah,
As a little anecdote, I remember my first day of secondary school, and, you know, I was a gentle kid, you know. I'd never, you know, I don't know, huffed a helium balloon at a party or anything like that, you know. I always towed the line. And I remember first day of secondary school, sat down next to this lad, Roland was his name, and he said, oh, do you like comics? I was like, yeah, I like comics. You know, I've read Thomas the Tank Engine Weekly, and, you know, I used to be a big fan of Sonic the Comic back in the day. And he showed me an Aliens comic book. And I always remember, like, it had a scene in which humans have had all their limbs cut off and their faces mutilated and are being fed kind of like tadpole-like creatures in this kind of farm, like the aliens are farming them.
Oh, which episode of Thomas the Tank Engine was that?
Yeah, it was more like... Reverend Audrey was going through, like, a really bad kind of, like...
It's like Boxing Helena suddenly had appeared,
yeah. Yeah, I just... It's...
That was an interesting coming of age comic.
Yeah, kind of like really, I was like, I'm not ready for that. But anyway, yeah, the filth years later was a bit like that, and I thought, oh, I can't appreciate this. But now, coming back to it, every couple of years I go back, I'm like, oh, I get this a bit more. And, you know, I often just, like, you know, browse my shelf, I've got all my graphic novels, and I think, what am I going to read? You know, what kind of takes my fancy? And I thought, well, I haven't read a filth in a year or so. Bring it down and just enjoy it more and more every time. Like, it's brilliant.
Brilliant. Ah. Sounds really interesting.
Yeah, no, it's good. If you haven't read it, I would, you know, I'd recommend going in with, like, a kind of line your stomach, if you can, and just, it's a trip through the utter kind of dregs of human culture, society, psychology. It's meant to make you feel dirty.
Kind of like this show.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's certainly what I hope. Get out.
Yeah, that's why Tony, you read it. You just wanted to get prepared.
Me and Tony was talking about Croydon earlier, so
yeah. What I was reading Razzle Reader's Wives earlier, just in preparation.
I tell you, years ago, I went into secondary school, got a load of comics in the local comic shop, and one of the ones I spotted on the shelf was an Elemental sex special.
So, they were crazy.
Yeah, the guy at the comic shop wouldn't give a fuck. Like, I was about 14, 15, so I bought it and thought, wait, well, let's have a look at this. Took it into school on Monday morning. Someone said, oh, let's have a look at that. So I didn't see the comic for the rest of the day. And then by sort of like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, people were giving me really odd looks. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? And basically this comic had traveled the whole year. It came back like no cover. Absolutely. Like, I was like, oh, great. Cheers.
Now, I love the Elementals, but he did go off on one at that point, didn't he? That it became very strange. I think there's 3 or 4 sex specials, aren't there? And, very peculiar stuff.
I don't think I'm familiar with this one.
It was Kimiko. It started out, I think, Kimiko. It's sort of 4 characters. One's fire, one's air, one's water, one's earth. And they're sort of stuck at a certain age, and it's all a bit weird. And then it does go... It's, like, super violent. I would say that probably the main series would be great, Dan. You know, it's right up your street. Yeah. But he brought up these sort of sex specials towards the end, and then swimsuit specials and stuff, and they were just really out there. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. It was just, like, quite sort of, that's where he's gone with that, you know.
Do you remember one issue? And I've only seen, like, 1 or 2 issues apart from that sex one. And that was really violent. It was, like, having a woman chained up and, like, burning her face off. You're like, fucking hell.
Yeah, it's by Bill Willingham, who does Fables. It's the same guy.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, yeah. But the you can't get reprints because the guy that owns Comico, I think, is basically... Yeah, I think him and Bill Willingham famously had a fist fight or something. He tells this story on Word Balloon. I think they famously had a fist fight, and he won't give him the rights to his comic back, no matter how much he offers, you know?
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
But they are... I mean, you can pick them up really cheaply at comic marts and stuff, you know, but they are really interesting.
Mm.
They're a sort of Fantastic Four deconstruction in a way, I suppose. Yeah. You know, very good they are. Yeah.
It does worry me when you hear, like, these tales of, you know, you say, like, you know, they got into a fist fight, you know. Because I often feel like it's like looking into the future. It's this really depressing thing where, like, you realise all these heroes, your comic heroes, the people who... Yeah. Wrote your favorite books, like you think, oh, what are they up to now, you know, when you're old enough to care? And like and so many of them are just like weird or racist or kind of like really bitter,
slightly right wing, and you think, oh yeah,
I find it interesting when you read about the feuds they've had, like they kind of some of them like really feuding over the years and years. I was reading about that guy punching Bill Finger, like the Batman. Who's the guy that Bob Kane
Bob Kenyon.
Slapped him in an elevator or something because like he wouldn't give credit to Bill Finger and stuff like that. And it's like, whoa, didn't know all this shit went on.
Is that really? Neil Adams? Oh my God,
yeah,
was that?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? He tells that story, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a weird world. I collaborated with I won't say his name, but I helped quite a famous Marvel writer write a novel recently. Mm. And then he's just sort of disappeared, and it does leave a bit of a bitter taste in your mouth. You think, oh, I helped you, well, you know. Strange, isn't it? And these people have all, you know, they're all professionals, and sometimes you see them like ranting on Twitter, don't you, about each other, and you think, yeah. Oh.
I think that's just a bad, bad idea.
But also, collectively, such a small industry, like even now. Yeah. Like, you know, we were talking earlier, like we all know, or if we haven't met him in person, we all know, you know, Chris Imber, just because we move in the same circles. You know, you're not that far removed, certainly with Twitter now, from, you know, all the big names, like, you know, inverted commas. And it's just like, it's weird, isn't it? Like big ripples in a small pond.
I see, John, you ever encountered anything like that with your doing your stuff? I mean, kind of bad relations with an artist. What do you think kind of covering yourself legally beforehand you get into it, you kind of avoid that?
I think I was very lucky when I started out, because I think one of the first comic, I want to say it wasn't paid, but the first kind of comic gig I ever did was I lived in Canada for a year after finishing uni, and that was kind of like my comics pilgrimage in a way. I said I'd dedicate a year to myself, travel the country, and I met some really cool people while I was out there. I met Mark Wade, I could go on. Anyway, I'll dive it. But like, I met Cameron Stewart and Bill Willingham was out there, and Greg Rucker, just at these conventions over in Canada, and they were amazing. And I met this American couple called Comfort and Adam.
Yeah, married. So, what's the book they work on?
Uniques.
Uniques, yes.
Yeah, okay. Great book. No, I wasn't sure if anyone on this side of the pond had heard of them.
That's I know Comfort and Adam. Yeah. Ooh, carry on.
I ended up writing a story for an anthology of theirs, and the process of working with them, they used a work for hire contract. And I remember thinking, oh, that's a really good thing to do. And then when I got around to making my first book, I did a similar thing with all the artists I worked with, many of whom on my first book were American, because I got to know them through that anthology I'd worked on. But I had one bad experience, and I won't name the guy, because I get small pond and all that.
Yeah.
But he was an American chap, and I was at the time I was advertising for artists on digitalwebbing.com.
Yeah,
it's like it was a good, really good resource for me back in the day. Like, you put an ad up and you say, hey, you know, artist seeking writer, I can pay X amount, blah blah blah. And I said, like, I'm looking for pinups. I wanted some, you know, little standalone pictures of my characters to go in the back of the first book. And this chap got in touch, and his art was incredible, like absolutely stunning, you know, and he'd work with some big players. And I think kind of doing little commission jobs like this was a nice way of, you know, supplementing his income, really. He said, he gave me his rakes, which was kind of double what I could afford. And I said, well, you know, I can't, you know, I'm very, you know, thanks for your time, but I can't afford that. And I think he said something to the effect of, well, tell you what, my rent's coming up. You know, this was it. He said, I pay like half up front and half at the end. That was kind of like that was a standard arrangement to what we did.
Yeah.
When working. Right. And this one time he said, well, tell you what, my rent's coming up. If you pay me up front, I'll do you an extra picture. And I thought, well, that's kind of like I'm breaking my rule here, but, you know, why not? It seems like a great offer. Hmm. Now, we got the pictures in the end, and they were fantastic, but it took months, like absolutely months. And he kept kind of like blowing me off every time I say, like, you know, hey, where are they? You know, what's happening? He said, I'll do it in a week. And he just kept kind of, you know, pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. And I think if I hadn't kind of chased him, I'm not sure it ever would have got done. And this kind of like this, you know, and then finally I got my pictures and I never thought of it again. And then a couple of years ago, I was at he's an American chap, so, you know, you're not going to bump into him on a daily basis. But a couple of years ago, I was at a Bristol convention, I think, chatting to a nice guy called Sam Rhodes, who he's making a comic called Silicon Heart.
Silicon Hearts, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he's a really nice guy. And he brought up the name of this artist, this chap we'd kind of, you know, both, as it happens, inadvertently worked with. And it turns out he'd given him the exact same story. Morenc's due, and if you pay me up front. And he'd been waiting a year.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, if you can imagine. So.
But you're right, though. It's such a small pond. These stories go around. People do hear them, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard of a few people even, you know, and you think, oh, you know, you're going to get a bad reputation. I think almost everyone on Twitter is the only, you know, there's not that many people buy comics and are in comics anymore. There's such a blurred line as well, you know.
Yeah.
I tell you one thing I've noticed. When I've worked for Americans, like doing a bit of cover art or interior, they always send me a contract to kind of sign off. Like the Brit guys, well, I'm not one of those people that kind of would fuck people over, but the Americans always send me like that standard contract about I'm not going to put any claims in on stuff. But that's interesting.
It's something we've certainly adopted now.
Yeah.
It's certainly like, you know, just because it's not just for our benefit, it gives the artist a bit of protection
as well.
It means that, you know, we guarantee that we'll pay them by a certain time. You know, that's, you know, I won't go into details, but we've been having a bit of trouble with someone we deal with in a business sense, and it just, you just realize how useful having a contract is.
Big time. Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, even though we're all small press and stuff, you still got to be professional. That's the way you got to handle yourself professionally, because that's how your reputation gets better and bigger, and who knows what the future holds for you. Like, if
exactly, you know, you're nothing without your reputation.
Do you ask for a contract these days as a freelancer? If you're going to write or you're going to do some art, do you ask for one? That's a problem for me. I've just been offered something, and I've asked what, you know, the rate is, and I've asked this, and I've had a quite strange reply. I won't repeat it because it'll identify the person. But do I now ask for a contract? You know what I mean? It's weird, isn't it?
Is it George Michael? Is it George Michael? Can you say it?
Go and look for those badges again.
Oh, right.
It's horrible, isn't it? Because they shouldn't have anything to fear. You know,
met Tony?
I guess once they start kind of like umming and ahhing, you're thinking, well, is this legit? Because they're umming and ahhing over something which is nothing, really.
Mm. But also just, it helps just for tax reasons. You know, if you're doing like if you're filling in your forms, you've got to declare where everything's coming from.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I know certainly a person who created an American creator who had a big anthology that got nominated for an award this year, and they were asked by, I think, two people for contracts out of about the 20 people they were employing, and they were quite open about saying how much they really found that irritating.
Really?
Yeah. So I think you've got to be careful about asking. Don't every time you get something say, well, I want a contract.
No.
You know, it's a weird, there's a line, isn't there, somewhere, you know?
I think I may be lucky in that regard, in that I haven't really done that much freelance work, which I think, it's often the other situation.
A lot of the stuff you do is your actual creative property, isn't it?
Hmm.
Yeah, it's like I very nearly, about a year ago, I was between jobs. I just finished working at my previous day job, and I didn't know what the future held, and I just started working at Waterstones, of all things, and I was approached by a games company, of all things, and they said, it was like an indie games company, they weren't massive, but they were like, we want to do a tie-in comic, and would you be interested in scripting it?
Yeah.
And I was really excited. I was like, oh, hell, you know, like, finally, you know, the big leagues. And, we got as far as signing like an NDA, the beginning of like a contract, and then they just never contacted me again, you know, which is kind of weird. So, like, you know, I didn't lose anything at the end. Yeah. You know, I wasn't owed any money or anything, but I don't know. It's weird.
So people watch out, look after yourselves and each other.
I say it might seem a bit redundant now, but should we do like John's intro?
Yes. I was trying to find the appropriate moment for the segue.
It's got a bit dark, hasn't it? We've talked about sex, depravity and litigation.
Yeah. So let's alleviate the darkness. Let's talk about death. John, John, your book, Afterlife Inc., pitch it to us. Go.
Okay. Afterlife Inc. is a tale of Jack Fortune, con artist extraordinaire, known for his trademark white suit and a 6-foot prehensile red tie which floats through the air of its own accord. And following his untimely demise, Jack arrives in an afterlife in chaos and then takes over and runs it like a business, hence Afterlife Incorporated.
He's done that quite a few times.
A little switch just flicked in my head.
I think that was the spiel you gave me when I asked you, what's this book about then?
I think I probably sweared.
Oh my God. John Locke, writer.
Writer on the show, everyone.
It's been a long weekend, I'm sorry.
You put out the Book of Life. How many trades was it? You've put out three trades, isn't it?
Four technically, because there was the Heavenly Chord crossover which is volume 2.5 of Afterlife Inc. and volume 1.5 of Seven String, but wasn't completed in time to go in the Book of Life.
Okay.
Wow. So how did this all come about? How did Afterlife Inc. start? You know, is it a story you've always had in your head, or was it just out of the blue, you just thought, I want to do a comic. What should I do?
Well, can I start at the beginning, Vince?
How long is this episode going to be?
I'll try and keep it as brief as possible. That's my footnotes. But, well, basically, like, I started making comics back in primary school. You know, they weren't great. I dare say they were pretty awful. But
yeah, me and a couple of mates... I did the same.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, you know, kind of like hand-drawn. We put them in these little kind of W.H. Smith's laminated folder binder things.
I did that.
Well, you see, we're in good company.
Yeah.
And I realised even at that age that I couldn't draw. Like, it was kind of like a devastating realisation for a seven-year-old where, oh, hell, you know, I can't do this. And, you know, two of my mates would draw, and I ended up with kind of scripting duties, and I really enjoyed it. And as we all grew up, you know, as some of us grew up faster than others, like they left it behind. It was kind of like, oh, you know, we're done with comics now. But I kind of still carried that torch inside me, and I kept writing these little stories for myself, mostly kind of in my head. I just kind of like weave daft little scenarios of characters and stuff. And I was always drawing. And for my own pleasure, really, not, you know. And I had dreams of maybe being an artist back in the day. And I did work at it. It wasn't great, but I did draw a hell of a lot. And, and then kind of around secondary school, I started working on my first kind of like superhero story, which, again, never saw publication, was never even drawn up. But I'd write scripts. I wrote tons of scripts. I had no idea how a comic even got made. Like, I didn't know, like, where did you find artists, where did you meet people? I designed all the characters, at least, and drew them and had my stories. And then I kind of went off to uni, and I studied biology. That's kind of like, that was my alter ego, actually, kind of like respectable scientists. And I still just kept working on these stories throughout university, and I still had no idea what I was going to do. And then after uni, I ran away to Canada, as I mentioned before. And that was really, it's just kind of like amazingly formative year for me. And but I remember Dark Force, which was the name of my very first comic, which I was...
Nice.
And the problem with Dark Force was, it was probably the most 90s thing you've ever read. About a decade too late.
Were there pouches everywhere?
There were pouches, Vince.
So many pouches.
I kind of like came from the Joe Mad School of Anatomy.
Yeah.
Where,
yeah.
Like, the guys were all pretty hench, you know, kind of like just neck, nothing but neck. And another big problem with Dark Force was, is that if anyone asked me what it was about, I couldn't tell you, because in my head, it had become the most ridiculously convoluted, contrived, like just a real mess. Like the kind of, someone once made the comparison that, like, humour is something which you understand, maybe your mates understand, but comedy should be universal. Mm. And I've always felt it was the same with kind of stories, because in my head, Dark Force made perfect sense. Like, I loved it, but I couldn't communicate it to anyone. It was just like, it wasn't going anywhere. Yeah. And then when I arrived in Canada, I remember going to a little kind of comics festival in Toronto, and we met Cameron Stewart, who was there. And he let me go to his studio and kind of like just hang out for a day. And he was a really nice guy. And I remember him saying, like, how my plans were just so ridiculously ambitious. Like, you know, this Dark Force was going to be you know, this 100-issue, you know, symphony of this, this grand opera of comics. He's like, dude, just start small. You know, for the love of God, start small. You're going to kill yourself. And I thought, wow, I need a clean break. And also, like, I'm just sorry, anecdote central here. There's a comic shop in Toronto called The Beguiling, and I can't remember the name of the manager. But
that's a great name for a comic book shop.
Yeah,
very cool. Neil Gaiman used to go do readings there, which was kind of funky. But I never saw him. Anyway, the point is, I can't remember the name of the manager, but I am for the rest of my life, I'll be indebted to the harsh but wonderful advice he gave me.
Put some trousers on.
Yeah, he said, my shop, stop calling me. Step away from the glass. And he said, because I was telling him, I said, oh, I want to do this, I want to do that. And he just said, I'm going to stop you there. He said, there is nothing more overrated than a good idea. And I remember that absolutely shattered me.
Did he just drop the mic and then walk off?
Yeah, he just walked off. Yeah. He just left the store with, like, the till was open and everything.
And it harks back to the point Tony made last week on the podcast. It's all great talking the talk, but you got to walk the walk.
Oh, yeah, no, that rang very true. I remember thinking that, like, you know, oh, yeah, yeah. It was just, and yeah, it was harsh, but I needed to hear it. And he's just, and I realised it's so true. Like, I'd been talking about it for so long. I'd never actually done anything with it. And I'd hooked up with a very nice chap, a Canadian chap called Keith, who we'd met, I think, through Digital Webbing. And he was an artist, and we'd started talking about bringing Dark Force to life. But we weren't doing anything. We just weren't producing stuff. And then kind of I thought, I need a clean break. And I thought, I started having this weird idea about an afterlife, like a multi-tiered afterlife. And it was kind of like, it was vaguely in my head, just like, right away I knew we'd have a guy made of metal. He'd be made of like gold metal. And in my head, I think he looked almost like bird-like. He was made of like cogs and wires and stuff. And I knew the main character would have a tie. He'd have like a really long tie, which would move through the air.
And that was a visual thing that immediately you had sort of Jack Fortune's look.
Yeah.
And it just came to you like fully formed like that.
Yeah, straight away. And like I remember describing it in the kitchen of this hovel, this absolute cave of a house we were living in with 9 other travellers. It was just disgusting. And I remember describing it to people and saying how it's going to be like a murder mystery in the afterlife. And the original idea was going to be that when you're in the afterlife, your soul, it was this original idea that which became the Empyrean, that you'd have this afterlife built over 7 layers. And like in the afterlife, you had like 7 souls or something. And like when there was a guy getting killed in the afterlife, and every time he got killed, he dropped down a layer until at the bottom, there'd just be the kind of like void of existence or something. And like, I thought that seems a bit kind of morbid. And somehow it just turned into the idea of a company. And just, I thought I'll call it something like Afterlife Inc., but better. Like, I'll find like a better name for it.
And the classic working title moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it kind of stuck. And like, all these kind of things which were surrounding me at the time just kind of informed it. Like, I'm looking to the right of me right now. I have, this is wonderful for a very visual medium like the podcast, but I have a small sack of sugar. There's method behind my madness here. I was working in Starbucks in Toronto, and there was a particular brand of sugar we sold for people to put in their coffee. And the symbol on it, this is where I get slapped with so many lawsuits now. But the symbol,
I can edit this bit out to like the magic roundabout.
Please do, the symbol on it is of a kind of a guy playing a guitar, and he looks kind of like, he's got darker skin, and it's a very simple kind of like Stylus Gagarty drawing, but he's got a broad brimmed hat, and he's wearing like flowing robes, and he's playing a guitar. And I remember thinking, that's Anahel. Like straight away, like I love the idea of having like an angel, like an archangel, one of the most powerful beings who just looked like a kind of tribesman, like this kind of amazing elder kind of earth god kind of tribesman. And he was just there straight away.
And it's interesting because Afterlife's got so many, all the cast list, they've all got very different, distinct looks, haven't they?
Well, thank you. Yeah, like, again, it was weird. Like, Lux, again, just sprang into my head straight away, and I ended up doodling them. I mean, Vince, you've seen the Book of Life. I think if you look at the back, there's actually some of my very early sketches of the characters, which were then later turned good by better artists.
Hang on. Let's have a look.
Again, visual.
Oh, God. Oh, God. I can see them.
So yeah, how do you hook up with the artists? Is it through like digital web ring?
Yeah, well, I when I got back to the UK eventually, I've been using digital webbing a hell of a lot, and I worked on the Unique Tales, which was the anthology which Comfort and Adam put together, and I wrote a couple of chapters to that, and of course there was a load of artists who'd worked on that book, and I started talking to some of them afterwards, and someone recommended digital webbing to me, which back in the day was really as simple as like a kind of classifieds site. You had
it mentioned on here before, yeah.
Yeah.
A few people hung about there, didn't they? Yeah.
Yeah, you had like a 100-word limit to write an ad or something.
Okay.
And two sections, paid and unpaid. And I'd always been posting in unpaid because, you know, I had no money, and I was kind of like, well, hey guys, got a great idea for a comic. You know, I can't pay you anything, but like, if we hit it big, we'll split all the profits, that kind of thing. And nothing ever really came of that. And weirdly, and but when I got back to the UK, I got a day job, and you know, my living expenses were kind of low. I didn't have a girlfriend at the time, and I just kind of lived quite frugally and put a lot of my money into savings, kind of like just put a bit of money aside every now and then to make a comic. And at the time, we were limited by what I could afford on a regular basis. And I always...
Was it a sort of long-term thing? Because I know one of the... we were talking about on one of the episodes, the murky nature of the finance world, especially if you're a writer searching for artists. Was it a long-term thing? You'd like do a story, you hire an artist, do a story, and then save up some more money and go on and on? Or did you have a nice lump?
I had a bit of money to begin with, because I remember when I went back to digital webbing, I'd saved up enough money for an 8-page comic. And I don't know if are any of you familiar with Planetary by Warren Ellis?
Yes, yeah.
In the back of a first trade, I remember reading Planetary for the first time when I got back, and in the back of a first trade there is a short story called Nuclear Spring, I think, which is like a kind of homage to the Hulk. And that was originally done as an 8-page pitch for Planetary. And I got into my head that, like, what a great idea. Like, because I still believe, at the time, I believed very strongly that the way to make a comic was to impress a publisher and then get picked up. I thought it was as simple as that. I thought you kind of would wander into the middle of a Comic-Con waving a script and just going, like, I'm a writer and I have an amazing script, and then just like at the back of the room, the publisher will pop up and go, "I'll buy that script," and you
away you go.
Yeah, I kind of had this idea that you never had to do, as a writer, there was just this pathway, and you did it that way, and you know, and I eventually found that you had to kind of start doing some of it yourself. Like I never set out to be a self-publisher. But yeah, sorry, I'm getting a little bit off topic. But yeah, I saved up and we started doing 8-page stories. I mean, originally I just did one 8-page comic, which became the very first Afterlife Inc. story, Final Destination. And that was to support a pitch.
Is that the first story in your book, is it? I've read the... Right, yeah, that's a great one. I really like that one.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, that was...
But that's, 'cause to me, that one drops you straight in at the action, doesn't it? You almost...
Yeah.
You know, it's like a great opening to a film where suddenly you're in a plane crash. Yeah, really, really good.
Well, it's I know the weird thing is a lot of people said afterwards, "Oh, I really like the way in the first book you're just in the world, like it just kind of happens, and you're in.
Yeah.
There's no kind of like origin story." Mm-hmm. And they said, "Oh, that's really clever. I really like how you did that." And I was like, "Yeah, that was totally planned." but in reality. Now, this is gonna sound stupid, but I have, and to this day still have, seven books. Six, if I'm Scott Waffling, but like at least 6 books of Afterlife Inc. planned. And they were always going to be, but that was always going to be the rise and fall of Afterlife Inc. And it was going to have it as a definite end planned and has been since day one and still exists. But the trick is, I didn't feel I was a good enough writer to start telling those stories. Like, right. I wanted to learn and grow.
Mm.
So I did that one Final Destination story, which wasn't part of the original plan. And I tried pitching. I pitched that. My first ever experience in pitching was to a Canadian publisher. And after several months of talking and perhaps time wasting, because they probably could have just said straight away they didn't want it, but they said at the end of the day, well, we really like it, but we're already going to publish something about angels and demons, and we don't want to be known as the publisher who does angels and demons, which I think some people cause to believe is actually just the nice thing they say to people when they don't
right. yeah.
like the comic. But I figured, well, I've done one story. Maybe I'll do another. So I got into this routine of kind of like saving up until I could afford 8 pages and then doing another short story, then another short story. Yeah. And kind of like at the end of a year, I had enough for my first book. And suddenly I'd ended up kind of self-publishing, which wasn't my intention. Cool. But the point is, like, that story, that entire book wasn't part of my original plan.
I get you. So it's almost like a zero issue series as a sort of prep for the... Yeah, I get
you. No, exactly. And then...
Interesting.
Because I'd already got into the role of it, we then ended up doing a second book, which wasn't part of the original plan. And then right. we kickstarted Lifeblood, which was the third. And our first kind of like, with every story, we try to get a bit more ambitious. Like the first book was kind of like standalone stories. The second story, we started telling longer stories over smaller parks. I was still kind of limited by the budget model, by only being able to do like 8 pages at a time. And then we kickstarted the third book, which was 100-page continuous story. And then we collected them all as the Book of Life. So suddenly we had this, I think it was like 378-page graphic novel, hardback, which was never part of the original storyline, which was now our year zero. So
yeah,
because I'm an utter masochist, we're now, there's now going to be 10 books of Afterlife Inc. And I'm actually now working on book 4 of Afterlife Inc., which really is book 1.
Okay.
So it's kind of now you get serious. After all this, is it? It's almost like now you've got to dive in.
Now, yeah. And like, I feel, I don't know, I'm not sure I'll ever be a perfect writer, but I'm better than I was, you know? And I kind of like...
It's interesting what you said, though, because, like, you know, you went into that comic book shop thinking, I've got a big idea, it's going to change the world, and, like, that one bit of advice made you step back, and when you started Afterlife, you thought, you know, it's almost like you took that advice to heart, and you took it in baby steps to help yourself improve as a writer, but also by doing so, it's a double-edged sword, because you built up this universe with it, you know, as well as improving with each story. By the end of it, like you say, you've got year zero. And a following, which is very important in this game.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which is astounding. Like I feel like I've stumbled into this life, and I never. It's a bizarre moment where I kind of look to myself in the mirror, and I realize I'm doing what I love. Like it's, but like, you know, I have the day job. You know, God knows I don't want to create any false impression that I'm living a rock star millionaire lifestyle of a professional comic book writer, you know, that exists. But I, for the longest time, had wanted something. I desperately, desperately, desperately wanted to make comics. And I was so obsessed with wanting it that I never actually got out and started doing it. Mm. And I think I got into it at just the right time, because I arrived at a time when suddenly, you know, digital software, you know, software was at a level where you could make really good looking books on your own. You know, printing was becoming a bit more accessible to the masses.
Yeah, and, definitely. Yeah.
And, you know, I remember I spent 2011, the same year I was making those first stories, and we put them up on my website. And to be honest, I don't think anyone ever looked at my website, but, you know, we were putting a story up every month. And
Do you still keep that current? Is that...
Yeah, I've got to say, like, the website still exists. It's almost more of a legacy thing now. Like,
JohnLockWasHere.com.
Yeah, like, you know, when my withered husk finally collapses at the typewriter, that will be my, you know, last will and testament to the world. But, yeah, it's weird. Like, I originally, the idea was we'd put stories online and then print them later. It was very much inspired by the Freak Angels model.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Warren Ellis and Paul Duffield, which was I thought was fantastic, and I didn't have the steam to quite match their productivity, but I tried doing what I could, and yeah, I spent all of 2011 while making these stories, kind of scheming, like planning, and I went to as many conventions as I could. You know, I met people, I partied with them, drank a bit too much, met printers, letterers, that kind of thing. And then I said to these people who were behind tables, like, you know, this mythical golden race of people who were, you know, publishing and selling their own comics. And I said, yeah, how do you do this? You know, where did you get your banners? Where did you book a table from? And they said, well, you go here, you do this. And they were really helpful.
Yeah,
there's no secrets, is there? I think that's the thing. You ask people at tables, they'll tell you where the best place to get stuff printed is and that sort of thing.
Yeah, definitely. That's the best thing about the community. Kind of, you ask a question and someone will answer it.
And I think that was a real watershed moment in British indie, like small press comics, is the point where, I mean, I used to get my stuff printed at Catford Print Centre and used to have to go to the Catford Print Centre with your discs and then they'd show you, you know. But
that's
now
it's so sordid, Tony.
I know. If you know Catford, it is. I've got to say. But now it's all through the devil's window, isn't it? You sit here and we look at our screen and we get it printed up on here and we press a button and with our credit card details and we get it done, you know.
Yeah.
I think that was the moment when everything changed. It became easier for some people to get their, you know, their comics printed, you know.
Well, I think it was something you said last in the last show, which I thought was really good, and like the double-edged sword of there being no quality control, if you know what I mean.
Right. Yeah.
It was kind of like this amazing democratization of it, where suddenly like anyone could go and make a comic, and you know, there were no gatekeepers. But at the same time, you know,
should everyone make a comic?
Well, no, but I mean this. Yeah. More is like a reflection on myself as well, because it's like the comic is entirely me, including all its flaws. And I know there are flaws, and like I look at them and I'm like, oh God, like, I wouldn't do that. But I'm kind of like, I like to think I'm getting a bit wiser, you know. But it's like people were very forgiving, I think, like when I started out. So it gave me a bit of momentum to carry on.
Yeah, it helps that, like, you've got such a unique sort of pitch, you know, the pitch itself and the levels of the afterlife. And, you know, it's not just, you're dealing with angels and demons and all that sort of stuff, but it's not like the 90s sort of comics, angels and demons sort of, where
Dark
everyone's,
Force.
Yeah, yeah, it's nothing like Dark Force, which is cool. Do you remember Dark Force, guys?
Brilliant, wasn't it? Loved it.
I can pretty much guarantee you that while you have never read Dark Force, you know what Dark Force is.
Yeah.
Wasn't there was an image title called Darker Image, wasn't there? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
That's what I'm confusing it with. Yeah, that's definitely where it's sitting in my mind. I mean, I have to say, there is a line, to me, there's a line between Afterlife and 90s Vertigo to me. I'll be honest with you. There's a little bit, the things I liked about Lucifer, I like about your book. You know, you've got that sort of manipulative central character that's interesting. You know, is that a fair thing to say, or?
Well, that's a very flattering thing to say. Thank you. No, I think people have really definitely connected with Jack, which was a real, you know, honour. Because I guess, yeah, he's a very flamboyant kind of central character, and I think certainly as a centrepiece, I think he's done quite well as holding a wider cast together.
Influences in terms of like literature or anything like that, you know, that goes
Dante's surely got to be an influence, is he? Or
You've got Dante's Inferno, some Judaic literature. I mean, all the, which, you know, I attribute more to a lost weekend on Wikipedia, and I've never been able to find those pages again. But all the different layers of the afterlife are named after different layers of heaven, I think, from Judaic mythology. I could be completely incorrect in that, but you've got kind of like slightly Hebrew-esque sounding names like Shemayim, Raquia, Shehakim, Makon, Makon, Zebul, Araboth, and then there's also some Hindu kind of concepts with which, of course, probably didn't come across on the page, but there's a background kind of like mythology to that. And then, I don't know, I always feel like it was a slight cop-out, really, because by having an afterlife where everyone from human history can turn up, and even some fictional characters on occasion, it's actually just like a really cheap writing gimmick, because you can just
right
you can pick and choose from anything you like, really.
Yeah,
But no, I remember, sorry, I think Terry Pratchett was also a big influence as well. Certainly like... Certainly the character of Moise von Liptwig in, was it like Going Postal, Making Money, like this amazingly kind of charmingly good through bad, you know, thief of the heart of gold at the start, at the centre of it all.
Yeah. There's a lot going on in Afterlife, you know, with all these different worlds and like belief systems and stuff. But at the end of the day, all that's well and good. But if your main character, if you don't have, if the audience can't relate to them, then you're kind of dead in the water. Jack Fortune's, he's a layered character. He's not just a, he's not a cookie cutter sort of character, which makes the reader want to read more about him and see like how, normally how he's going to get out of this one.
That kind of thing. Thank you, Vince. Like every time we meet,
he's never nice to me.
shut your face, Tony. It's not about you.
I said, noticed John on the other day. You posted up on Twitter one of your, I think it was a spare room or one of the rooms in your house flat, just filled to the brim with boxes of newly printed comics.
Yes.
Bumi got plans for them.
Maybe, again, the legacy thing, we're just kind of like board up that room and leave as a time capsule for future generations. when they find the first of the bodies, that's the room they'll kind of like clear out first. But no, that's, I mean, we're, I guess, you know, we've been selling Afterlife Inc. and for, I don't know, 3-4 years now, I think. And we're obviously the biggest, probably most significant development in that time for us is that you know, we've kind of joined with Nick and Ali on Seven Screen. I mean, because I'm not using like the autocratic us when I say that, like me and Lucy, my better half, and you know, Nick Angel who does Seven String, and Ali, you know, his partner as well, and you know, the four of us met through comics, and it's ultimately led to this, I guess, they have great friendship, but also, of course, we've incorporated Seven String and Afterlife Inc. into the same multiverse, I guess. And so what you saw there, that kind of massive pile of 3,000-odd books, is us kind of growing as a business, really. And that was a restock, our kind of biggest order ever, of Afterlife Inc. Volumes 2, 3, and Seven String Volume 2. So brilliant. Finally, we're back up to stock again, and hopefully that'll last us a good while.
Because Afterlife was going for a couple of years, and then you met and fell in love with Nick Angel, creator.
Yeah, it's the love that dare not speak its name.
And that sort of led to the crossover, The Heavenly Chord.
The Heavenly Chord, indeed.
Which was launched at Melksham. What year was that? That was 2013?
Let me see, because we brought the second one out. Yeah, so it would have been 13, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and that, did that in turn sort of, the working relationship that you had working on this, which was great in itself, two separate small press entities meeting, and then you somehow figured out a way to make them cross over, which I love that concept in itself.
Well, I think that was when we first, like, maybe we met the previous Melksham, I can't remember things, but I remember being so surprised at that 2013 one, you turned at the table completely naked, apart from the framed picture of Jack Fortune
over my crotch.
Yeah, which you and Dobes had done, and of course you were holding Jack Fortune close to your family jewels, and Dobes was doing the same with a matching one of Zach from Seventh String.
Whilst Tom Jones was playing, it was a real sort of a full Monty moment. It was beautiful.
Yeah, and it was magical. Yeah. Really brought a tear to my eye.
But after The Heavenly Chord, was that when you decided, let's make this a thing, and then created Big Punch Studios, which is another conversation entirely?
Well, yeah, it kind of like came in increments, but back in that kind of scheming year when I was, 2011, when I was kind of like touring conventions and just as a punter and just talking to as many people as I could and getting as much information as I could, I remember, I think it was a Birmingham, it was like one of the last of the original Bix. Yeah, was it Bix? Yes. Back in the day, like one of the, I think it was the last one before Bix kind of went away for a couple of years and then came back,
right?
Yeah. And I was there with Mike Scott and Mike Garley, and we were kind of walking around, and I want to say that's when I first met Nick, and I walked up to his table and I was kind of like, oh, well, what's this, you know, this looks cool. Yeah, it was there with Seven String, and he opened up a double page spread in the first issue, and it was this one which had.
I'm so glad you said double page spread. Then that could have got really bad.
You really opened up to me, Nick. Nick's, oh my god, I'm kind of picturing Nick's face over yours now. It's terrible. He opened up Seven String to this amazing double page spread of all the gods of Melodia, his world, this world where kind of music is magic, and you had like the seven, this pantheon, and like there was a god of rock music, a god of folk music, a god of like interpretive jazz music. And I remember him kind of like describing this to me, and then once he'd finished, I think I swore at him. I think I was so kind of like, I was just like, you swine, like, you absolute git, look what you've done. It's like, look what you've done. You've just made a sale here. And like, because it just seemed so.
You're an awful customer.
I really am, yeah. I was carrying a knife as well. And I just like, it just blew me away. I was like, this is, I love the world building of it. So right away, like, I hadn't made a comic yet, but I kind of like, I had this kind of, I was like, wow, I'm really struck by Seven String. I love it. And he very kindly, I was carrying around a portfolio of like some of the early pages of what would become book one of Afterlife Inc. And he was very kind, he very kindly looked at it. And I remember we kind of like bumped into each other for a bit and like, you know, always exchanged pleasantries. But when I got the first book of Afterlife Inc. out at the very first London Super Comic Con, my very first con experience behind a table, which was absolutely incredible, he picked up a copy. And I remember he sent me a really nice email afterwards saying, you know, oh, I loved Afterlife Inc. And by all accounts, like, Afterlife Inc. had kind of set, you know, hit a very similar chord with him. And we were both, I think, trying to achieve something very similar. We were trying to world build in a way. And then, you know, we just, you know, me and Lucy and Nick and Ali, before we just got to know each other a bit better. And I think it was at Kapow the following, later in the year, we went to grab like sushi after the show, like you do. And then just out of the blue, Nick was like, do you want to come on a holiday with us?
And... Oh, hang on. This is getting,
<Hang on.
laughs>
this is getting a little bit sexy for me.
Yeah, and we the four of us went on a holiday, and it was amazing. And we just hung out and just really got to know each other. It was tremendous. And then after, I think it was like 20, might have been late. I think it was late 20, kind of summer 2012. We were chatting on, I was on Twitter one night, and I just said to him, oh, Nick, you know, wouldn't it be hilarious if we did a piss take of the end of Iron Man 2, where Coulson goes out into the desert and instead, and, you know, he finds Thor's hammer. And we just do that direct scene, but with the seven-string sword, this amazing guitar sword from Nick's world, kind of sticking out of the desert in the Empyrean, the afterlife of Afterlife Inc. And, yeah, you know, we said, oh, yeah, that would be funny. We laughed, and then this kind of like, well, you can imagine we weren't in the same room, we were tweeting, but then this kind of like Twitter silence kind of fell between us. And then we were like, actually, that would be really fun. And I then kind of, I guess, thrashed out this kind of, I don't know what you'd even call it, like an overview, like a treatment of what I thought the story could be. And sent it over to Nick. And I figured, oh, yeah, we'll have to call the bad guy Requiem, because Requiem is like a song for the dead or something. It'd be perfect. It would merge the two works together. And Nick loved it. And we were like, hell, we're doing this. And then we started working on it. And that began a beautiful friendship. And once we got the Heavenly Chord out, we were like, well, we kind of need like a banner to put this out under. And we figured, why don't we be a studio? You know, like, we didn't live in the same towns. We lived, you know, a couple of hours away from each other. But we were like, why don't we say, We're collective, you know, we work together. That's fine. That'd be awesome. And I remember telling him about the very first comic I made back in primary school, which was called Big Punch. And he was like, ah, well, he loved the name. And then he drew up a logo. I was like, well, bloody hell, that's brilliant. And the next thing you know, we were Big Punch Studios, which is like, you know, a studio in not a physical premises, but just like a collective, like, you know, just two mates working on a book together. But in the last year, we've taken it a step further. Like, we're now a limited company. We're now, you know, okay, we have, you know, all the business trappings set up with it. And as you saw, we're now doing slightly bigger book orders to try and grow.
Mm. Was that an issue to kind of get the whole legal side of it, or kind of get official, as it were?
A little bit of a headache, but not a massive one, because we'd always, we always kind of like, we had to think long and hard about what we wanted out of comics. And I think it's something which has kind of like bedeviled me from a scar. And I'd like to think I'm not alone in that. It's a very needy industry, if you know what I mean. Like, I think...
You're talking to the right people. We're all pretty needy on this show.
Well, you know what I mean? Like, we kind of... There's this pre and widely accepted idea of how you break into comics. And it's often like, you know, you get noticed by a publisher, you kind of climb up through the ranks, you know, and that's the way to kind of greatness. And I think there's still this belief, which, you know, I carry still, maybe, that we're all just waiting for a kind of like a fairy godmother kind of publisher to kind of like swoop down and kind of pluck you out of obscurity. And I kind of like, it felt for the longest time, I was getting a bit kind of like weary of it. Like, I was kind of like, I felt, why am I doing this? Like, maybe I'm doing it for the wrong reasons. Am I kind of just making this comic because I want to be noticed? Like, is it kind of like a springboard to something? And it seemed a bit destructive, you know, because I had started maybe pitching Afterlife Inc. around again. I pitched it to a few companies unsuccessfully, I should add, of course, and had some very mixed experiences with talking to publishers. Like, I know one publisher just flat out said, I don't like the art, you know, just right there. It's like, oh, we've hit a bit of a stumbling block here, haven't we, really? And, you know, it's like, yeah, well, unless you change the art, we're not going to consider it. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. And I quite like my artists, you know, they've all done a great job. And, you know, larger company, never heard anything. Smaller company, kind of wasted our time a little. And I know Nick had some slightly mixed experiences with a publisher, because at the time, Seven String was being published by a Canadian publisher. And we both felt a bit kind of disillusioned with it. And we thought, well, hang on a minute. Say we never make it big. You know, say it never gets any better than this.
Hey, John, you're on this show now. Like, we've got a track record.
it's only downwards now, my friend.
But yeah, like, it was just, we figured, could we, if we were still doing this in 10, 20 years' time, if we were still touring the conventions in the UK, you know, we'd probably be completely grey in the head by then, you know, kind of doddering, withered, kind of just completely exhausted. But like, would we be happy if it never got any better than this? And we thought long and hard about it. It was a lot of soul searching. We thought, well, yeah, like, if I could say I'd spent my life making comics I cared about with people I got on with, then I couldn't really imagine a finer thing to do with my life. And certainly with Big Punch, which is more, I should add, than just me and Nick. It's Lucy and Ali. Like, it's the four of us. We do stuff as
like
a club.
Like Bucks Fizz.
Pretty much. And I tell you, like, when you whip that skin off me,
fucking Bucks
my Fizz. Legs are fantastic. But yeah, sorry. I'm
on the side. You tickled me with that one. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I'm
Why
sorry.
Why do we never go on holiday? I want us to go on holiday.
Look.
It'd be amazing, you three.
Butlins, you can get in Butlins from like 99p, I think. That's what I saw on a TV advert.
I won't be there, but yeah, you can go.
There's a comic in there somewhere.
There's an
afterlife somewhere in there, John. I've got to tell you, because I'll die if we go there.
The layer of hell that Dante forgot to write about.
Yeah. The awesome comics holiday.
Yeah. Oh my God, I want to see that.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry, I'm rambling. You've given me the opportunity to air my hateful, ill-informed opinions, so now I can't shut up.
That's why we brought you on here, because we want to get like people like you on, so we have to do as little work as possible.
I think, like, you know, I can't imagine what it's like for the listeners. They must feel like, Jesus, you know, this guy, shut him up, someone.
Well, to be fair, like,
go on, Tony.
Well, I was to say, we've had a lot of people on that are just like, there is no one way into getting your comic done. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, some people have said they've been picked up, others is they've taken the long route. So it doesn't seem like there's one set way to do it. But essentially, where you're talking about, like, let's make this comic that we really enjoy and we really want to do. If it gets picked up, that's great. But otherwise, we're having a fabulous time anyway. Do you know what I mean? That seems like a perfect philosophy.
And there's that famous Mark Waid quote, isn't there? Like, breaking into comics is like breaking out of prison. Once one person does it one way, then they seal the hole up and it'll never happen again. You know, you've got to keep choosing different ways to do it.
What is it, Shawshank? Jesus.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. Yeah. Without the prison rape bit, that's not in it, I don't think.
John?
Hello.
So, Big Punch, obviously you're working on like a quarterly sort of... Is it quarterly?
Yes, it is.
That's a whole different beast in itself, isn't it? But what is next for Afterlife? Because you just mentioned that you're about to step on the gas for, is it the fourth book?
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Volume 4, Man-Made God. Or I'm debating, just to screw with the fans, completely renumbering it, going back to zero.
Reboot.
Volume 2, Book 1, or Ultimate Afterlife Inc., or something, just to mess with
people. Yeah. Well, hey.
I was working with this is a fun little thing that just sprung to mind. A friend of a friend of, like, an uncle of a friend, something like that.
What?
A friend comes to me and he says, my uncle's friend's chiropodist, like, he works in theatre and he really wants to make a comic to go with a production. Do you think you could help him out? And I was like, well, maybe, I don't know, like, tell him to get in touch. Like, here's my email address. And I get this email a few weeks later. And this guy goes, hi, John. Or should I say, and it was something like bizarre, like Stormcrow Hayes.
What?
He addressed me as Stormcrow Hayes. And he said, like, thanks for helping me out. You know, I've been put in touch. Now, I went and bought your comic off Amazon, Afterlife. I look forward to reading it when it arrives. You know, is John like a kind of pseudonym or something that you use? Like, you know, wait, do you get, is your real name like Stormcrow Hayes?
Oh, I so wish it was. Yeah.
And I just, I had no idea what was going on. And yeah. I thought to myself, the weirdest thing about this is that my book isn't on Amazon. So I went on Amazon and there is a manga called Afterlife by a guy called Stormcrow Hayes.
Oh, okay.
And he bought this book. And I got back to him. I said, "Well, hey, I'm really sorry. I think you've bought someone else's book. And I hope you enjoy it.
All the best, Stormcrow."
Yeah. It's Mr. Hayes to you. I never heard back from him as it happens, but yeah, that anecdote doesn't really go anywhere. I just thought it was weird that like he. Yeah, just a chap who maybe wasn't overly familiar with comics going like, well, there must be only one comic in the world with Afterlife title. And, you know, maybe he does sign off his emails as John Locke and maybe his email address has John Locke in it. But clearly his name is really Stormcrow Hayes.
I'm totally calling you that from now on.
It's weird someone to like initiate that contact, like have real interest in it. And then just like, bang, gone. It's happened to me more than
and
once.
Me. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's weird that, isn't it?
You were mentioning video game sort of opportunities earlier. I've had two or three companies write to me and say, oh, you've got some great ideas. How about you write some characters for us? And I've gone, oh, yeah, brilliant. Yeah, just send me them. Never hear from them again.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of people who do that, I think, aren't there?
We had a weird experience at the last MCM where, you know, I kind of think like my past self, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, would never have dared do this. But we had this chap come up to the table who was, he was representing some kind of racing company.
Okay.
He was like, I represent the world's largest kind of like drag racing corporation or something like that. And he said, and we're planning this amazing kind of like anniversary special. And it's going to be kind of like a 100-mile race around Europe. And, you know, we'll be doing comics, games, books, movies, like air fresheners, toilet cleaner, you know, kind of like amazing tie-in products and stuff. And he said, and we're looking for a comic. Do you think you guys would be able to produce it? And we're like, well, you know, me and Nick are kind of like sharing looks and like, as I know we're stupidly busy and I'm like, well, you know, we're very busy with our own projects, you know, but we're always looking for maybe corporate work to supplement it. We'd be very interested in talking rates and stuff. And I remember a guy kind of did a double take and said, well, we wouldn't have any money to pay you. He goes, his words were, we'd be looking for you to lead on this project.
Oh, good idea.
And I remember saying to him, he said, well, if it's quite as important to your project as it is, because you've been talking to us for 5 minutes now, I said, well, maybe you should have considered budgeting for it. And it was kind of like, it was so, you know, it's like as soon as you realise, like, you know, that the comic people might actually want paying for their work,
yeah,
it kind of vanished. And it's funny, isn't it? Like, yeah. you hear about this happening quite a bit, actually.
People kind of pitch comics, like saying, oh, looking to get this drawn. It's like 8-10 pages. And then they're offering like 50 quid. It's like, that's just ridiculous rates. It's absolutely ridiculous. And they don't seem to have a concept of the kind of the time it takes to produce pages. And I just find generally people pitch under when it comes to comic books, unless they're kind of in the trade and they know about how much work it takes. Because if you get, I've had people come up to me saying, oh, we're looking to kind of do this product, we've got this budget, and it's like, oh my god, that'd get you like one page, let alone a whole comic book is ridiculous.
Because yeah. Dan, you're a writer and an artist, aren't you? You're the full package.
Yeah, I kind of came to the
Dan Ryan Butcher, the full package.
I was going to bring up earlier that all good first issues start with planes crashing, because that's what happens in Vanguard One. So
kindred spirits. Yeah, this is where, you know, I turn the spotlight on you, because I was not familiar with Vanguard. But I do intend to check it out, because I'm very interested and intrigued. Oh, I want to hear more, so thank you.
Yeah, so I've got a guy helping me now called Gary Cohen, who's helped me with the writing duties, because doing the web drawing art promotion and everything, it's very hard to kind of keep on top of it. So getting someone who's actually a writer to kind of keep it focused in.
It's like a huge family tree now, your book, isn't it? There's sort of so many strands out from it, aren't there? You know.
Well, I want a few more people to add onto the credits. Because when I've gone on Comixology, it's like, oh, cover, me, art, me, writing, me. Yeah, me.
My heart went out to you when you said last episode, like, you know, you've got to be all things to all men. You know, you've got to be your publicist, you've got to be your producer, your financer, your writer, you know. I mean, talked about like the dream earlier. Like I still harbour this amazing dream of someone saying, "It's all right, John, you just do the writing. You know, we'll do the rest." That'd be fantastic.
But I mean, even with the days of sort of social media, even if you're like a writer for say Marvel or DC, that's only 40% of your job these days, seemingly, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the sort of meetings and publicity and social media and, you know, pitches and you know proposed film scripts.
Yeah, those writers, there's probably a reason you see their name on several books, because one book isn't necessarily going to bring home the bacon every month, is it? You know, they're always doing two or three stories, and probably got a book and image which is making them more money than their other stuff.
Yeah,
that does seem to be the model now, doesn't it? Like they do a bit of kind of corporate work for Marvel and DC, but kind of like express yourself through image.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like even with the image model, it's like image publishes a lot, you know, and they have their kind of their big success stories. But I think a lot of stuff also kind of just comes and goes. And I think you are the master of your own destiny. Even if you got into image, I wouldn't say it's like a kind of surefire quick.
It's not anymore. I was hearing this off someone the other day. It's not anymore. I was thinking it was a writer was telling me, look, the days of like, you know, you can start an image book and print your own money are long gone. I mean, I read about comics and listen about comics and read comics every single day, but books come out from Image every week that I haven't heard of, you know, and they're selling less than 2,000 or 3,000, you know.
Because I mean, they publish results that if Image carries on track, it will take over DC in like a couple of years. Obviously, that's like not including fluctuations in the market. I'm not sure if I've got too much faith in those statistics.
I'm just impressed you're using those kind of statistics.
87%, we're all made up. But I think the bubble's going to burst a little bit for Image. I think, you know, it's almost like there's too many first issues to me.
Yeah.
You know, there's something like The Walking Dead and classics like that, you know, and even The Wicked and The Divine recently. I know Kieran Gillen's been quite vocal about, look, it's still making me money, it's still earning me a lot of money, but the sales numbers are down. You know.
He's spoken quite frankly. Actually, I greatly admire Kieran Gillen. Actually, he's a lovely chap, and he's doing some very impressive things. And I think he's spoken quite candidly about the margins, and also like I guess the margins of success, like what is classified as a successful book with Image. Like, and you think like even these big titles, you think, oh, you know, it's massive. You know, maximum global sales may only be. Well, I can't even pull a figure out of my head, but they're a lot smaller than you think.
Yeah.
I think it's like 10,000, I think he quotes.
Yeah, it's crazy.
You know, which years ago, you know, the lowest selling Vertigo books would be cancelled at 10,000, even for Vertigo books, you know. Mm. Yeah, it's a whole weird, the market's very strange, because you're basically the publisher, aren't you, Image, as I understand it. You're the editor and you're the publisher in many ways for your own book. So the line of making money and not making money is lower compared to Marvel and DC as a freelancer. But you still have to shift numbers. You still have to do that promotion, which, because no one else is going to do it. No? And if you look at a lot of Image books, you'll see that the adverts in Image books, you can figure out who's whose friend almost.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you know, such and such book will be advertising such and such book. And you think, well, I know they know each other, you know.
I think Image does, like, if, you know, at least, you know, one thing they can hold up is to say that, like, we do publish some very good books, and that's true.
They do.
Yeah. I think there's also, there's maybe a slight, I think you touched on it, like the kind of issue one syndrome. Like, a lot of books are maybe, they're not designed to last. It's kind of like, it's high concept. Oh, what if this was this? And you're like, oh, cool. And then it's over.
Yeah,
and like,
yeah, we've talked about this on the show before. Yeah. I mean, Skull Kickers, I think, was where I first noticed it. It probably happened before that. But I remember Skull Kickers 1 came out and everyone went crazy for it. You know, and I think it's Jim Zub, I think, is the writer on that. I was chatting to him at a convention, and he was saying he couldn't believe it. You know, the first issue went through the roof, but the numbers on the last few issues were, you know, weren't able to keep it going, as I understand, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
So I think there is that first issue thing. I think there's a lot of books that come out, and you think, oh, I've not even heard about this. How do I not know about this? You know, we'll see. It's interesting times. And I do I read an awful lot of Image books, but then again, I read a lot of Marvel books as well. And sometimes I am a little disappointed when people, you know, they dump Marvel for Image, you know, naming no names, Matt Fraction. You know, they seem to sort of disappear off a book, you know, they disappear from a company that's almost nurtured them a little bit, you know, and looked after them. And, you know, and then suddenly, you know, you don't see that book. And where's that book ended? What happened to that book? Why is it 3 months ago I saw the last issue? And they're busy, you know, burrowing away at Image, you know.
But you've got to have a kind of, you almost need like the, certainly in this age, the internet personality, the public presence to carry a book now. Like, you know, Matt Fraction is, he's kind of got this rock star Image.
He has,
He's a very cool and funny guy.
He's like a stand-up, and he does all sorts, doesn't he, now? Yeah,
yeah, no, you can back it up. And actually, I remember I went to, again, nothing but anecdotes, I went to Comic-Con in Toronto towards the end of my year in Canada, and Matt Fraction gave a talk on how to write a comic, which was very, very useful. Right. And I remember I asked the question, I said at the end, how... And this was kind of like before Sex Criminals, before Casanova. Like, he was working on X-Men, but hadn't quite kind of...
Okay.
A really good speaker. But I remember I asked a question. I said, when you write a comic, do you just kind of like start and see where it takes you? And then kind of, what happens if you run out of pages at the end? And he said, here's a really good trick. Get a piece of lined paper, write a sentence on each line for each page. He said, 22 lines on a page. Can you describe what happens on each page in a sentence, in a line? And I remember everyone in the room just went, and then everyone scribbled it down. It was a kind of like light bulb moment. And I've been doing it ever since, basically. So I'm very grateful to him for that.
That's keeping it simple is always the best way, isn't it, I think. And that's, you know, okay. I mean, to me, just quickly getting back to Afterlife, I think, John, if you don't mind, I have to say, I like very quickly, I like just robbery. Firstly, Pray, Die, Enjoy. Is that on a t-shirt anywhere? Because I want that t-shirt straight away.
It probably should be, actually.
Yeah, okay. But the other thing is, I was struck with the tone that you shift with artists, which I found really interesting. Are you writing for an artist when you discover one? Or are you just giving them the next script sort of thing?
No.
Well, the main reason I say it is Silver Screen, that chapter with, is it Roy Hutterson Stewart?
Yeah, Roy Hutterson Stewart.
That's him, yeah. Really like that. Really, really nice, tonally, almost sort of quite crime noir, sort of acid trip crime noir thing going on there. Really, really nice.
Yeah, Roy is absolutely fantastic. And he was certainly one of my earliest collaborators. And I think I met Roy because I'd entered the 2011 Observer Jonathan Cape short comic competition, which was like, do a 4-page comic and send it to us. And I think it was Digital Webbing where I advertised and got in touch with Roy. And I think it was, or maybe we met at a convention, I can't remember, but I wrote probably the most pretentious thing I've ever written, which, and that's saying something coming from me, but it was, it was like a kind of beat poem about like a cat moving through like a weird kind of psychedelic city, and Roy came out blue, and like Roy loved it, and he said, "Oh, I really like this script." And he, you know what his style was like. He did this really weird, surreal kind of like collagey kind of artwork, and I thought it was fantastic. And we didn't win, we didn't even get like kind of shortlisted, but you know, he's a really good guy, and I enjoyed working with him. And then when I had the idea for that story, I thought, "Oh, I want to do kind of like maybe as like a little homage to the early days of Afterlife Inc." But I thought, "Oh yeah, let's get Roy in for that. He'd be perfect." And he was
really nice. Yeah, yeah, lovely, lovely page that is. Yeah, sorry, just had to ask about that. Really,
no, it's very kind. Thank you.
Ask whatever you want, Tony.
Thank you.
So, where can people get Afterlife then, John?
You can get Afterlife on our joint Big Punch store, along with all our other Big Punch titles, plug, at on our Comicsy store, which is www.comicsy.co.uk/Big Punch Studios.
Nice. So, cool. And cool. If you're at any convention that the Big Punch guys are at, definitely check out their table, because it's colourful and they're lovely to chat to, as you can tell.
Thank you, Vinks. And if you're...
Shut up, John. I'm talking.
I'm sorry.
He's like this all the time. This is how he is.
If anyone's coming to MCM London in October, we've got something special planned for there. So keep an eye out, because we might have a slightly larger floor presence than we've had before.
Brilliant.
Oh, nice. Speaking of the weekend.
We won't be there.
Yeah, speaking of the weekend of October, where MCM is on, October the 24th is Nottingham Comic Con. And we've got a competition where you can win tickets. Isn't that right, Tony?
That is right. Yeah, we shan't be at MCM London. I'm sorry about that, but we'll be at Nottingham, which is just as good. The website is www.nottinghamcomiccon.co.uk. You can find them on Facebook or they're on Twitter, which is at Nottingham Comic. It's a great convention. It's a one day, third year. Previously, it was Nerdfest. This is the second year where it's been called Nottingham Comic Con. Great guests. It's a proper comic convention. It's got some great panels, some short film showings, loads of back issues, small press, and some great guests as well. Great comic pros. It's all for charity. Plus, we'll be there. So please come along. There is a competition. So we've got two tickets to go to it. Kindly supplied by Nottingham Comic Con. And there's a question that we want you to answer, which we're going to pose. In a previous episode of the Awesome Comic Pod, I posed the question. I encountered. Oh, I'm fucking this right up. What's going on? Keep going. I met Wallace Eats, who a very talented comic creator. And I bought a comic from her. It was at the LCAF East End Comic Convention. And she put something in my comic. Now, what did she put in it? And that's the question. If you can answer it, you may all be in the draw to win two tickets. Please get hold of us at our Twitter address, which is...
awesomecomicspod@gmail.com.
And our Twitter?
Which is at the awesome pod, yeah.
That's it, lovely. And you can find us on Facebook, send us a message on there, and we'll put you in the draw.
Now, to all our lovely US fans out there, we love you, but this is for tickets for Nottingham, so unless you're willing to jump in a plane and fly over...
We'd love you to.
We'd love to see you. We love all of you. Oh, yeah.
But for these 12-quid tickets, it's probably not going to be worth it, let's face it, but you know.
Yeah, but get in touch. So then, John, it's been a pleasure. But,
it's been an honour.
Well, it's been many things. A lot of them I can't talk about. Let's talk about recommendations. Tony, what's your recommendation for this week, my friend?
Okay, my recommendation this week is Dirty Rotten Comics. Has anyone read it at all? Or
No.
That's quiet.
Yeah. No. Tumbleweed maker, Tony Esmond.
What is happening this week? I don't know. You wankers for not reading it. That's fair. Sorry about that.
You're quite right, actually. Yeah, go on.
It is kind of, at the moment, for me, certainly in the small press in London world, it's the daddy of the anthology at the moment. It really is. It's onto its fourth volume. And it's, I think, 80... No, it just comes in at just under 100 pages. It's the fourth volume. It's sort of square-bound. And it's edited by Gary Clapp and Kirk Campbell. www.dirtyrottencomics.co.uk, and on Twitter they're Dirty Rotten Comics, comics with an X on the end. Here's some of the contributors. Journey into Stupid's Claude TC. Does anyone know Claude at all? Writes a lot of stories about penises. Yeah, very talented guy. Private Eye and Charlie Hebdo's David Ziggy Green, who, bit of a pal of mine, really good guy, big supporter of the show. Walks with Lulu's Elizabeth Queerstreet, who we mentioned on the show before. Tim Bird, and just like tons of really, really great contributors. It's, I think they're just putting together their fifth volume, which will come out anytime soon. And it's a great little, they send it to me every time and I review it for the site. It's really, really worth a look. Nice. That's mine.
Cool.
Where did you say you can get that again?
I got mine sent to me, but I think it's in Gosh, it's in Orbital. This is in most of the comic shops with a small press section, you'll find it. But you, their website is dirtyrottencomics.co.uk.
Nice. Cool. Dan?
My one's not so much a comic book, it's a children's book. But it's written and illustrated by Kate Beaton, who did Hark a Vagrant. Is anyone familiar with that? I'm sure most people are. She's written a children's book called The Princess and the Pony. And it's a story, it's about a little princess who like lives, she lives in a warlike kingdom. And every birthday she asks for something like quite warlike, but it's always given like jumpers and scarves and things like they think a girl should have. So for her next birthday,
that's like every Christmas for me, that is.
She wants, for her next birthday's coming up, she wants a war horse. And when the birthday morning comes, she gets this like tubby little pony who eyes kind of look out in different directions. But sort of undeterred, she's going to take it to this melee coming up. And it's fun. It's really, really good. It's the kind of book you can, all ages. It's great.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Where can you get that?
I think it's going to be in most kind of good bookstores. I think
Amazon,
I saw. In my, I think they got it online. But
nice, definitely.
Yeah.
I love a children's book. I think that says a lot about me.
That's why we read books with pictures, my friend. That's why it is.
Yeah, you know it. I don't like this. Prose. What's that word? I recommend this week you check out a sort of web strip called Human Nature.
Okay.
Written by Adam Voke and art by Paul Desmarais. I'm going to say it like that. Once again, apologies if I got the name wrong. I discovered this one through Twitter, but it's the classic sort of like sort of office humour. It's a webcomic about an office where humans and anthropomorphic animals work side by side. And it's sort of like every day a different sort of joke kind of thing. It updates like once a week. Black and white. It's like, it's kind of like The Office meets, what's the word? Not Peanuts, but it's very quirky sort of office humour. And they say in there about also there will be farting in it, and who doesn't love farting? Communists, that's who. So it's been running since 2012. At the moment, they've just gone on a temporary hiatus, as webcomics need to do sometimes. I'm sure, Dan, you know about such things. So it's the perfect time to get caught up and marathon a load. The two creators met when they were working in the video game industry, which I know we brought up a couple of times in this one, and they realised they love working together so much that they decided to start a webcomic, and it's hilarious. Like the art style's really... it's hard to describe, but it's got a very sort of animated feel, and you know I love that kind of animated style. But just the one-liners and some of the things the characters say. And to be honest, any time you read in a comic the line, "Honey badgers are the dick bags of the animal kingdom," you know it's pretty amazing. So I definitely recommend Human Nature, which is www.humannaturecomic.com. And you can also follow them at Human Nature Web, which is well worth checking out because they're just funny guys in themselves. So very much worth it. What about you, John?
I think we're running the whole gamut of entertainment here because we've had a comic, a webcomic, and a book. And because I've not actually read any new comics recently or anything which I feel deserves like a particular spotlight, I'm actually going to recommend some music. Are you indeed? Yeah, I have been listening to a lot of Divine Comedy and also Mr. B, the Gentleman Rhymer. And I don't know if anyone is familiar with the work of Mr. B.
No, I've never heard of him.
Oh, my life, right, okay. Mr. B is the pioneer, the creator of Chap Hop, which is hip-hop as if invented by Victorian gentlemen.
Amazing.
He's got three albums out, OG, Original Gentleman, the Tweed album, and Can't Stop, Shan't Stop. And had a recent holiday, and me and Lucy listened to it throughout the entire holiday. It was a soundtrack to our time away, and it is fantastic. It's hilarious, really, also really good musically, great raps, all done in the kind of received British Queen's English accent. It's fantastic.
Nice. I'll also check that out.
Yeah, I love discovering new music. So,
Divine Comedy as well. I've been working through the back catalogue. Casanova by Divine Comedy, I think a 95 album. It's fantastic. It's tales of love, sex, obsession, loneliness, quiet despair. It's
Tony Esmond.
Look.
Beautiful.
What?
Perfect soundtrack to staring in through a glass window.
Yeah. Cranking, I'm going to say that again.
God!
Can I make a very quick shameless plug at the end of this podcast?
Yes.
I just want to say, thank you for having me. It's been wonderful. And, of course, I am but one-fourth of Big Punch Studios. And while I love blowing my own trumpet, I'm also incredibly proud of the work that Lucy, Ali and Nick do as part of our studio. So if anyone's got a spare moment and would like to check out some of our stuff, you can go to www.bigpunchstudios.com because we do, after I think, we do Seven String. We do our quarterly magazine, Big Punch Magazine, featuring Cuckoo's Orb, 99 Swords, Cat Meringue and The Wall. And we're just bringing out our first card game, Sandwich Masters, and we've just got the proofs back this week. So if you'd like to check out any of that, please check out the website. And don't do it for me, do it for Nick, Ali and Lucy, because they're really talented.
Brilliant.
We'll definitely have a Big Punch episode. Yeah. I don't mean we're all just going to stand in the room punching each other.
That's what we do.
I wanted to do a quick shout-out to some of the stuff we got sent in to the show quickly. We had a great comic called Bayani in The Nine Daughters of the Moon by Travis McIntyre. He's currently running a Kickstarter. Yeah. It's got a couple more days to run on that. I've read it through. It's cracking.
Is that Travis Perkins doing the artwork?
Grant Perkins.
Grant Perkins. Sorry, yeah. Grant, I'm so sorry if you're listening. I'm being an absolute pillock today.
It's a story about two characters who travel through Filipino folklore and mythology. So it's on Kickstarter. I think it's the second book. They've already done one. It's well worth checking out. Yeah, all ages. Great.
And Grant Perkins, the artist, has worked on Afterlife, I think, and he's a fantastically nice chap and deserves your support.
Brilliant. And what other one? We've got High Priestess sent in, which I cracked through that. Thanks for Reese Finley for sending that in. Cheers.
Yeah.
Blimey, we're efficient. We're like a machine.
Yeah. So what now, dude? It's kind of
how the hell did that happen?
Do we just sitting silence now, awkwardly letting the tape run out?
Yeah.
Sorry. I pop up on the Games and Graphics podcast.
Because you are a Judas.
Yeah. So thanks to the chat, Batman, Romag and Ghostface. I think that should be up next week.
Ghostface?
Not only is he on it, Tony, behind our backs, he's plugging it on our show.
I know. Yeah.
Give me their real names. That's the only names I've got.
He's pulled the knife out of our backs and stabbed us right in the heart.
Walk out on a new knife.
No, definitely check out that podcast because there's been a few cool comic creators on there recently, so well worth checking out. In terms of Kickstarter, I just need to plug the Kickstarter for the third book of Wart. Chris Welsh, friend of Tom Ward, who was on episode 2, an episode you definitely need to check out. The Kickstarter's got probably about 10 days, something like that, left. And if they make their first stretch goal, they're doing pinups as one of their sort of things you receive. I've completely forgotten the word.
Rewards.
Rewards, that's it, rewards. Fucking hell, thank God I'm not a proper writer. Anyway, and I've done a pin-up for it. I'm one of the artists who's been honoured enough.
That's what it was for. That's a great pin-up, mate. I got to say.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
Was it embarrassing posing with your clothes off?
it's where the staple's going to go that you're worried about.
Can hurt when you put them in certain places, yeah.
But definitely check the Kickstarter out. It's a great comic. It's funding the third issue of it. Chris is a great bloke. And just well worth it. If you like Lovecraft, it's sort of a quirky, macabre, sort of Lovecraftian tale. And if you like that sort of stuff, it's got a great visual style as well. I picked it up at Birmingham Festival this year. And I just can't wait for the third issue myself. So, and I was very honoured when he said, would you like to do a pin-up? So,
nice.
Yeah.
I think you've sold it, Vince. I think I'm going to... I've heard a lot of buzz about it on Twitter, and...
I did post a picture of what the actual pin-up was going to look like as well, and I'm quite pleased with it. It sounds really odd, you know.
Right.
You know,
right.
No, I'm not saying it's amazing. Yeah. I'm only saying that because I'm amazed I didn't fuck it up at the last moment.
I like the way you put a brilliant Captain Britain up earlier, and that you had to write on it. Oh, I don't like the colouring in the background. It was like a 4-year-old's done it, and it was fucking brilliant. You brought it right down.
It was pretty good.
Thanks, guys. I don't take compliments well. I don't get them on this show as well, so I'm really not used to this moment.
Yeah, wait till we go on holiday. Be fine.
Speaking of going away, yeah, we got some events, Tony. Events. For the events.
Okay, right. Here's a list of events. Right, 12th of August, Jay Ferber, if anyone knows his stuff. He writes Cophead, Near Death, Dynamo 5, Noble Causes, a lot of other stuff. He's signing 6 p.m. onwards at Orbital, really talented writer. The same day, from 7 o'clock, so you've got time to get to both, is the Comics Talk, which at Gosh, just around the corner, which features two books by Avery Hill, who you know I love, Quiet Disaster and The End of Summer. There's a little sort of roundtable recorded talk that goes out as a podcast. 22nd of August is the Small Press Safari Festival, which I've not been to before, and I've only really just heard about. It's a day's festival, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Protein, which is New Inn Yard in Shoreditch. If anyone goes to Shoreditch, you have to have a beard, and it's www.breakdownpress.com is where you'll find it. Trousers that don't touch your shoes, all that sort of rubbish, you know. 26th of August, Rachel Stott, who I last saw.
Rachel.
Yeah, great talent and big Doctor Who fan. Big, just done Star Trek Planet of the Apes, which is, I think, traded, and she's signing at Orbital again. And on the 9th.
Rachel is a fantastic artist and deserves all the success she's getting. Because
she's going somewhere. I think she's 5 minutes from Marvel or DC to me.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I have like the great unreleased issue 2 of The Six, which was a little comic we started a couple of years ago with her artwork on it. I think I'll wait until she's really famous and then release it and be like, yeah. Rachel Scott exclusive.
Yeah. Yeah, great, great talent. I know Mike Garley's got to do stuff for, I think, the next Kill Screen, I think. She's done some stuff for as well. Then the 9th of September, 1 Year Wiser by Mike Medaglia launches at Gosh Comics. That's a sort of quote of the day kind of book. He's a really talented small press guy. Previously, I've talked about Seasons, gushed about it. And I've got a original page of that on my wall. So he's a great talent, great to pop along to. And the other thing we need to talk about is Melksham, which we're all going to go to. What's the date of Melksham? I've forgotten. Can you remember?
The 28th, Saturday the 28th, I believe, of August.
28th cool. And
29th,
isn't it?
29th and 30th of August.
It's that's
bank,
right.
Bank holiday weekend of August.
Cool.
And if you come into Melksham, Saturday night, Big Punch versus PCG Comics Group DJ battle.
My word.
Dude, I'm 46 years old. I don't understand what you're talking about.
He doesn't even know what a DJ is.
That's what I wear when I go to the Masons.
He thinks an iPad's something you wear if you've got incontinence.
Oh, there we go.
I blew your mind earlier by telling you that I'd never played a video game, and you still don't believe me. I think you still think I'm winding you up. Yeah. I've never played...
that still renders me speechless.
Here, right, anyway, I'm going through my Melksham thing, which I've got prepared. At it are Mike Collins, Lee Townsend, Emma Vicelli, Sonia Long, John Paul Bove, Dylan Teague, and Cavan Scott, and us. So come along, should be a laugh.
Yeah, we're all going to, all four of the people on this podcast are going to be there. You're going to be there, John, aren't you? Yeah, of course you are. Yeah.
Otherwise,
what's the point of turning up for a DJ slot?
Yep. Lamming's comics business now. I just turn up and DJ and go home.
Oh yeah, Mark Lamming's going to be there. Quality.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, we're all jumping in the car together, so we'll be might do a bit of recording in the car, maybe. But yeah.
Well, I'd say it'll be very nice to actually meet Dan, Tony, Vince. Not so much. We've seen each other far enough to think over the years, but
yeah, there's going to be a lot of love in that room.
Melksham is fantastic, actually, as conventions go. Probably my favourite show of the year.
Yeah,
I've been to it. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Yeah,
cool. great atmosphere. So, are we all done, lads?
Yeah,
I think we are.
Awesome.
Yeah. Thank you very much for joining us today, John.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
Thanks for letting me ramble. It's been fun.
Let's get ready to ramble, is what this episode will be called. it's been a good show. And folks, as always, if you like this episode, then please don't hesitate to get in touch and let us know what you think. There's several ways to do it. On the email, awesomecomicspod@gmail.com, which is also where you can send the competition entries. You can, if you've got any issues of a small press comic you'd like us to check out, or maybe get a shout out, tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. On Twitter, you can follow us at The Awesome Pod. On Facebook, you can find us facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And we love, like, we normally end up posting a picture of some random event that we've talked about on an episode. So God knows what's going to turn up this week. And as always, on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com, you can listen to all the episodes there, listen to all the past ones. There's lots of cracking people, much like John, who've got plenty of stuff to say. Shut up, John. This isn't about you. And also, because of that, we're also on iTunes, and we're desperate whores for attention, and we want reviews. Yes. So if you've listened to us on iTunes, leave us a review.
5 stars, cough.
did you put all of your feeling behind that? 5 stars, yeah. Cough.
I didn't want it to be too subtle. give us 5 stars.
Oh, thank you very much, folks. Right, where can they follow us on Twitter? Tony?
Ezoyes, which is E-Z-O-H-Y-Z, and I'm at Down the Tubes in the review section.
Dan?
Twitter, it's at Vanguard Comic.
Where can they find you, John?
I am at John Locke Comics, that's J-O-N-L-O-C-K. We're also www.johnlock.com, same spelling, and also www.bigpunchstudios.com.
He's a one-man business. Well, he's not one man, because he's got 300 people.
You said that already. You're not listening to that bit. Yeah, more than one.
Shut up, Tony. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jester Diablo. Don't say a word, Esmond.
Oh, not again.
Right. Thank you very much, folks. Hope you've learned a lot and found out about a lot of books you want to read. Check out Afterlife and all the good stuff we told you about this week, and have a good week and stay awesome. From me, Tony, Dan, and John, see
you. Cheers.
Bye. Bye.